On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, we review the drubbing in Chavez Ravine, the biggest 3-1 blowout in NLCS history as the Dodgers take a sturdy 3-0 lead over the Milwaukee Brewers. We also chat about the American League side, which is not providing interesting baseball games, yet it is setting up for a compelling finish between the Blue Jays and the Mariners. Jordan is in Seattle, and he's hanging in there, and so will we on this episode of Baseball Barbacast. Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world that thinks maybe we should just end this NLCS. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman, and it might be time for the Wrap It Up box.
Oh, the Wrap It Up box, one of my favorite pop culture references. But the Brewers will play at least one more baseball game this season. Does that mean it is going to go better? Will they score more than one run? I'm not feeling awesome, as they will have to face Shohei Ohtani. It is nice to see you, my friend. We are going to do a briefer version of Baseball Barbacast as I am sitting here in an undisclosed radio booth at T-Mobile Park after the Toronto Blue Jays just tied up the series. This is a very different series than what is happening on the National League side of things. But we must begin, Jake. Our opener sends us back out to Los Angeles.
The Brewers are on the brink, or are they over it? The National League Championship Series this year feels like the I don't want to sound disrespectful to the Milwaukee Brewers, who have filled all of us with so much joy and purpose all season long, but boy, is this a just futile, feeble showing from the team that won the most games in baseball. If I made you watch the first three games of this NLCS and I said, which one of these teams won the most games in baseball, you probably wouldn't pick the Milwaukee Brewers, because the Los Angeles Dodgers are handling this series with aplomb. They win tonight game three by the score of 3-1 to take. I mean, I don't even know if a 3-0 series lead is commanding. I think 2-0 is commanding. I would say 3-0 is definitive. Considering there has only ever been one comeback down 3-0. Of course, that was Dave Roberts himself against the New York Yankees in 2004. And if the Brewers want to keep their season alive and make it to the World Series, they will need to pull off something similar.
Yes, and as I've learned here over two games in Seattle, there is a big difference between a commanding 2-0 lead and a definitive 3-0 lead, as 2-0 really did not mean much to the Toronto Blue Jays. But we'll get to that a little bit later. Let's stay with the Dodgers. And yes, in game three, despite former podcast guest Caleb Durbin's best efforts, as the D3 legend himself reached base three times, scored the Brewers' only run, had two of their four hits. That was not enough. To a double and a triple, what a guy. I'm so happy for Caleb Durbin. But that's not why you're listening to this podcast, because the Dodgers dominated once again.
Maybe if the Brewers had more 2021 Washington University Bears in their lineup, you know, then they could have made some more noise. Where's, Bo Anderson when you need him? So let's run through the beat by beat of this game. We have Aaron Ashby opening for some freaking reason, even though he has been really just disappointing all postseason long. He opens for the Milwaukee Brewers, and he goes up against Tyler Glasnow for the Los Angeles Dodgers. The Dodgers score first in the bottom of the first. Ohtani, Shohei, who has been not a good hitter in this postseason, kind of flares a triple down the right field line. Wasn't hit particularly hard, but doesn't count. Mookie drives him in a batter later with an RBI double, and the Brewers' backs are already against the wall. Pat Murphy's faith in Aaron Ashby, inexplicable to me. I understand you want the lefty against Ohtani at the top of the order. Just let Mizorowski start the game. He walks Freddie Freeman. after getting Will Smith out, and he comes out of the game after recording just one out, leaving two guys on for Jake and Mizorowski. The Miz comes on, punches out Tommy Edman and Teo to end the frame and keep it at 1-0, top of the second. D3 Baseball punches back. Caleb Durbin lofts one to left field. Kike Hernandez goes full extension and misses it, turning a single into a triple. Jake Bowers singles Caleb Durbin home, and the game is tied. Jake Bowers then steals second and gets to third on a pass ball with one out. And you're like, okay, this is the Brewers making noise on the bases, wreaking some havoc, forcing the issue. Then a ball is hit to third base. Max Muncy makes an acrobatic. Yes, Max Muncy makes an acrobatic play, fires home to nail Bowers and end the threat. And the threat of the Brewers ever scoring again. The middle innings were defined by Glasnow and Mizorowski looking dominant. They combined to allow just three total base runners between the bottom of the second and the top of the sixth. Miz was particularly sensational, striking out nine. The key moment in this game here is when the Dodgers go to the pen earlier than they have in the first two games. Glasnow gets yanked in the sixth, and you're like, okay, we got a tie ball game. We got the Dodgers pen coming in. This is it. If the Brewers are going to take advantage, it's going to be here, and they don't. In the top of the sixth, Alex Vesia strikes out Frelick with a runner on to put out the fire. And in the bottom of the sixth, Mizorowski runs out of juice. Single, walk, single, run, scores. In comes Abner Uribe. He kind of works out of it and then has a doofus error on a pickoff throw to make it 3-1. And that's it. The Brewers managed just one more base runner over the final three innings, a Caleb Durbin double, as Vesia, Trinan, Anthony Bonda, and Roki combined for 3 1/3 scoreless innings, and the Dodgers win 3-1.
You know, you just go back to that first hit from Ohtani, and Ashby executes the pitch that Ohtani has flailed at over and over and over and over.
Sure.
But when he reaches out and is just able to loft that slider into the corner, and obviously always nice to be reminded that Shohei is also freaky fast.
He just turns on the burners.
You just kind of know. And listen, Ashby was awesome in the regular season. You want the lefty. But if you've gotten Mizorowski kind of back to the point where it was like, oh, this dude's legit, you do wonder what it would do to just send that guy out there in the first inning and, you know, blow 102 past the top of the order, you know, what kind of tone that would really set for the rest of the game. But they're already losing by the time he gets out there. It's just like, while he was brilliant, because the Brewers offense is unfortunately being stymied by these outrageous Dodgers starting pitchers, it felt hopeless. It felt like, all right, like, this is awesome. Like, this is a great, if that's the last time we see Jacob Mizorowski this season, like, I'm very excited to see him next year. You know, it was cool to see him kind of bounce back and show him what we saw earlier on in his career that, you know, made him an all-star. But it in the grand scheme of things, it just wasn't enough. And, you know, do the Brewers win this game if they start Mizorowski? Probably not, because as we just said, they can't really score. Caleb Durbin's doing his best, but I guess, they got to go call Tim Van Kirk and everyone else from that Bears team and see if they can really get some offense going. Because right now, and, you know, Churio leaves with an injury. He's been putting some good swings on some balls, but that's not exactly a good sign. But, you know, the middle of the year, Terang has just been awful, and Yelich is still looking for that RBI that he hasn't had in a long time, as you pointed out on our recent pod
2018.
In the postseason. Yeah, my goodness. So it just looks, and of course you have to credit the Dodgers pitching, because my goodness, it is that good. And Glasnow again with another awesome postseason start, and then the bullpen really, really shuts it down. Roki looked great, you know, after his kind of shaky outing the other day, and it is not pretty. And it's really all I got.
This series is making you think, why did all of us idiots not just pick the Dodgers to win the World Series the whole time? That's how I feel.
Or even at the start of the postseason, right? Yeah.
Even at the start of the postseason, like, the whole time it was like, man, these Brewers, wouldn't that be great if they could do it? And it's like, yeah, it would have been great. It sure would have, but it is not. and the talent gap, that's the thing, right? Is like the talent gap here is just so obvious. And the Brewers pitchers have done a good job relatively of limiting the Dodgers offense. But like when it flips over and you got Glasnow, Yamamoto, Snell against this Brewers lineup, there's just not that many guys talented enough to make things happen. And that sucks. You know, this is David getting a swirly from Goliath. You know, the reason that David and Goliath is a compelling story is because David usually loses and Goliath usually kicks his ass. And so that's what we're seeing here. We're seeing Goliath flex its evil muscles and take care of business. What do you got here?
Well, and again, I don't have much more to say on this, and we'll see Ohtani against, once again, Tom Brady's dad. Is it Quintana? I assume it'll be Quintana.
If Aaron Ashby opens this game,
because can they
score or not? If Aaron Ashby opens this game,
well, why would he's not going to open it for Quintana? I mean, that doesn't make any sense. So
that'd be so funny.
Yeah, but I don't know. So, but I think what's the most discouraging thing is that the Dodgers aren't really swinging it. It's not like they're just the Brewers out getting apparatus. As much as we can kind of quibble over Ashby, is kind of mostly doing it, you know, like it's not like the Dodgers are going out there and just blasting a million homers. And so that is what makes it feel even more hopeless. And bigger picture, what is so terrifying about the possibility that the best Dodgers baseball is still ahead of them in the World Series. And that'll be either the Blue Jays or Mariners problem, and that series is very difficult to tell at this point who that's going to be. But either way, I think, again, it's disrespectful to the Brewers to be like, well, clearly the Blue Jays or Mariners are going to have a way better chance. But the way that those teams are built, it is a lot more plausible for a lot of reasons.
I just nothing the Brewers have done over the last 3 days from the offensive side gives us any reason to believe that like they would be they're going to be better than the other two teams. I don't know.
Yeah.
Two other things, and then we could take a break and move over to the series where you are currently right now. One is like good for the Dodger bullpen for showing up and shutting the Brewers down. We have spent so much time and energy being like, the Dodger bullpen, is it terrible? Maybe it still is, but today they were not, right? And I'm sure it feels nice for those dudes today to, you know, be like, good, we're actually still pretty good. My last question, who wins NLCS MVP if the Dodgers, let's say they win 4-1 again tomorrow, right?
Okay.
You just give it to Yamamoto?
I think so. I have no idea. So like, again, if you look at the Dodgers offense, like Freddie's got two doubles and a homer. I don't know. I think Yamamoto, yes, because like postseason complete game. In what might be a sweep, like, yes, sure, fine. I'd be fine with that. That'd be cool. So, but yeah, I mean, obviously, with Snell, with Snell and Glasnow, and dude, like, sure. Ohtani, like, if Ohtani goes out there and goes like six shutout tomorrow, I mean, this is one of the most dominant starting pitching sweeps I imagine ever, right? Yeah. I will say it's easy for us to say that because like our perspective on starting pitching in the October, maybe this was, I know in like the 60s and 70s, you'd see stuff like this more often.
Dave McNally was doing it all the time.
Right. But it feels pretty significant, but we'll see if the Brewers got one last punch in them. We know Caleb Durbin's not going down easy at the very least.
Gonna have to wrestle that pit bull to the turf. I would, before we take a break, I'd like to investigate our tone. Because we are not, you know, disheartened or far from despondent, but we are not in any form celebratory right now. And I'm just noticing that. Like, if you listen to a Dodger podcast tonight, it's like, woohoo, like, we did it. Yeah. And I'm just thinking about why that is, because we are people who said that the Dodgers being this dominant force is overall good for baseball. I would say let's table that conversation a little bit. My thoughts on that have changed a little bit over the course of the season. However, I think the reason I feel disappointed right now is that this wasn't even close. This has not been entertaining. There have been moments. Like, game one was incredible with that goofy play, and they put up a fight. Really, since the ninth inning of game one, there's been no tension in this. And I think that's why I am, like, not down, but, like, that's why I am not like, man, this is awesome. Like, is this awesome? The display of talent is awesome. It is awe-inspiring. But I'm not sure that this is a great NLCS, I think.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, if it ends up being a sweep, it's hard to say that it's a great series. But yeah, I mean, listen, there's some larger questions that I know Jeff Passan tackled in his preview of this series about what this could mean in the grand scheme of baseball and how we talk about the sport when you have a team like the Brewers and what they are good at and how they succeed looking so hopeless against a team like the Dodgers and why they are good. Like you said, I think there's bigger Dodgers discourse we will have plenty of time to get into, assuming they do advance to the World Series. But we'll table that for now because it's late and we got to talk about the Blue Jays and Mariners, who are giving us a wonderful series, but in a very, very strange way. So we are going to take a break. And when we return, we are going to talk about this tied ALCS.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Is a series close if the teams have the same number of wins, but the games themselves are not tight? That is the question I bring to this table. And thankfully, we have a correspondent on site, Jordan Schusterman, coming to us directly from the booth in Seattle, Washington at T-Mobile Park. Safeco in my heart. You just witnessed two straight wins on the road by the Toronto Blue Jays. The last time that we spoke, we were like, Mariners up 2-0, make Humpy president. The Jays are a disgrace. Long live Seattle. And the vibe has very much changed. Why don't you take us through what you have watched the last two evenings?
Yeah, honestly, kind of similar games in some respects as the Mariners get on the board early in both of these first two games. We get a big homer from Julio off Shane Bieber in the first inning of game three. And I mean, it was so loud. It was so just so much incredible energy here in Seattle leading into that game. And Julio just destroying one into the bullpen. You're like, all right, they're just going to keep this going. Ride whatever they were doing in Toronto and just keep kicking the Blue Jays' ass. And boy, did that change in a hurry because George Kirby just started getting absolutely tagged. Blue Jays end up hitting 5 home runs, 18 hits, 13 runs, 8 of them against Kirby, which tied an all-time postseason record. A little bit misleading because it's been done like 30 times before, but it is interesting that no one has ever allowed 9 earned runs. No one can get to 9 earned runs in a postseason game.
I would do it.
You could. You probably
could. I could do it. Yeah, I think
give Jake a chance.
Let me at him.
Give Jake a chance. He could make history. But Kirby was just bad. They were all over the sinker. And then obviously at that point, in game three with the lead of the series, Dan Wilson kind of punts and says, all right, we're gonna keep the bullpen fresh. And we're gonna go back out there in game four with Castillo against Scherzer. We'll go get him tomorrow. We'll have all of our relievers ready to roll. So even Castillo, if it's a short leash, like, we can do it. And again, game three, there's a million Blue Jays highlights to talk about. Bieber was awesome after the shaky start. Vlad almost hits for the cycle, which I ended up writing about. Just a ton of hits, ton of walk. Like, it was like, oh, right, this team led baseball in hitting this year. Of course. Those two games in Toronto were the outlier for this season. This offense is legit. Even without Bo Bichette,
David Hopkins is him.
Yes, yes. I joked about him getting the standing ovation in Toronto and then them getting dominated at home. But he's come here and, let Pop cook. So anyway, offensive explosion. But also, it was really impressive. Sure, you're facing some of the lower tier. But, like, you don't score 13 runs in this ballpark against these pitchers, even the lower level. It just doesn't happen. So that was like, whoa, okay. Well, that was really something. What a response.
So I have to say, The one thing you have not mentioned here is just Andrés Giménez. I know he homers again tonight in game four, but the big swing, he has the big swing in both of these games. His two-run shot ties it in the third inning of game three. Andrés Giménez, who is hitting ninth, playing shortstop. I have joked on this show that if you do anything notable on opening day, I just assume that you're having a great season. I don't like Andrés Giménez went deep twice on opening day. I just assumed he was like having a career year. Not the case. Bad offensive player. But as far as I'm concerned, that's not true because he hit two home runs the last 2 days, hit two on opening day. And in between that, I'm sure he was delightfully good. And I don't need to look at the numbers.
Just to correct the record, did not homer twice on opening day. He did homer on opening day, and it was against the Orioles, and that's why you remember it. He did homer again 2 days later and again 2 days after that. So he had three homers in the first five games of the season, and then four over the remaining 96. And then he now has homered in consecutive ALCS games, which is truly ridiculous. And that does bring us to game four, where you have Max Scherzer. Oh, my
I have
goodness.
To offer an apology. I have to offer an apology. I doubted Max Scherzer in this game. I did. I doubted him. And I think I doubted him with some good reason.
You're not alone.
Name value aside, like, you can go look at like Justin Verlander's numbers this year and you're like, oh, 42, but he was okay. He did some interesting things. That is not the case with Max Scherzer, who was just kind of butt. He had a 5.19 across 17 starts, and the peripherals don't look that much better. And the Blue Jays give him the ball tonight, and in the second inning, well, he gives up a crank to Josh Naylor. Oh. And it's like, here we go. And then he throws it back on the rails, delivering a start that we will remember for a long time.
I certainly will, yes. Yeah, so Naylor hits that early homer. I mean, Scherzer, it's not, you mentioned whatever, 5 ERA for the season, 10-20 ERA and 4 starts in September. Hadn't pitched since, you know, end of September because he didn't wasn't on the roster against the Yankees. And with Scherzer, like, for the last 2 years, we haven't really even been talking about him as a pitcher because it's just been so many different injuries that he's coming back from or working his way. So you should really don't even know. You have no idea what to expect.
It's like, is he okay?
But he was good. Right. And like, is he going to wake up tomorrow and be able to move? Because history, where that just not always happened.
Yes. He's just been whacking his neck over and over and over again for 18 years, and his body is hanging on by a thread. But I think what I forgot, I think what I underplayed and is that these guys are built different. That Max Scherzer is not just really good. And like, equating Max Scherzer and Shane Bieber, even going back to back, is interesting because, like, Shane Bieber, former Cy Young, veteran arm, knows how to pitch. Max Scherzer, like, generational talent. Now he doesn't have that same level of talent anymore, but this is one of the best pitchers of the 21st century. And I should have just expected that at the very least he would have gone out there and just gritted through it and gotten it done. In October, when it really mattered, when he was going to have the adrenaline coursing through his veins and the velo was going to be up a tick. And that's exactly what he did, man. Like, this was amazing. 5 2/3, 3 hits, 2 runs, both earned, 4 walks, hilarious, 5 Ks. Just what was it like in the yard watching not even Unk, Gramps, watching Gramps go out there and get the job done?
Yeah. Oldest pitcher to start a postseason game since Jamie Moyer in the 2008 World Series. And who was here? Jamie Moyer throwing out the ceremonial first pitch. So that was a funny bit of happenstance. But Scherzer, man, I mean, you mentioned how he sort of compared to Bieber. It was kind of similar. After that slow start, kind of shaky start where you wonder how long he's going to go, he just starts leaning on the off speed. And the Mariners were just chasing sliders, chasing curveballs, just not connecting squarely with the cutter and the changeup. And yeah, Scherzer threw his hardest pitch in 2 years tonight, 96.5 to Cal Raleigh, I believe, in the first inning when he was still kind of finding it. He picks off a runner for the first time in his postseason career, which is what I'm writing a little bit about for my story right now. And just, and he had the moment, of course, where Schneider goes out and he says, no, I'm staying in. And you get that classic thing.
Let's lean in. Let's talk about that.
Well, yeah. I mean, I also want to talk about kind of what happened post game, because there was a funny moment there that I want to talk about. But yeah, I mean, you knew this was going to happen. And Schneider said post game, was like, yeah, I've been looking forward to that moment since our Zoom call last offseason, right? Like, this is, of course, this is exactly what it is.
Yell
but
at
I will
me.
Also mention.
Yell at me.
Right. It wasn't just, okay, leave me in so I can get out of this inning. They sent him back out for the sixth.
I know.
That was surprising. I assumed that was it. But they had a little bit more of a lead then, and he was able to stay out there and continue to get a couple more outs. And it was really, really impressive. There was a lot of, and it felt really special. I was actually at Scherzer's start when he came back. He pitched early in the season and then he immediately got injured, this thumb injury. And I saw him pitch in Cleveland. I think it was in May or June. And just, again, you got to appreciate these guys when they're still, whether it's going good or going bad, you got to understand when you're talking about first ballot Hall of Famers, it's just a special experience to get to cover them and to watch them do what they do and then talk about it. And Scherzer in particular, to watch him do what he does and the way that he talks about it and exists is very singular. It's not for everybody, but he certainly has made a big impact on this team. And what a moment. And will we see him again this postseason? Who knows? But to give him that. And by the way, the Blue Jays bullpen also showed up in this one. Obviously, they had a lead to work with because the Mariners bullpen. The other big story about this game is that Castillo gets the quick hook and then the Mariners relievers behind him just don't show up. Spire struggles again. Brash gives up a run on a wild pitch. Zardo gives up a homer. So that's really why this game got away from the Mariners and why they're in kind of a tough spot going into game five. But keeping the focus on Scherzer, it was just so cool. And I'll just tell the funny story from post game. So Schneider does his post game in the podium. You know, they bring in everyone, the key guys from the game. And so obviously the manager goes first. So Dan Wilson comes in and whatever. And then Schneider goes, and Schneider, of course, in a good mood, a lot of great stuff from him. But then the players come in after, and I guess Schneider was going pretty long. And so towards the end of Schneider's session, Scherzer walks into the room and essentially has to like turn around because he realizes that Schneider's not done, which of course is funny because it's like, you got to tell Max Scherzer to wait. And so that when he walked, that was already funny. Like everyone was already laughing at that point. Schneider raps. And as he walks out, he goes, because I guess Scherzer was outside waiting. And he goes like, all right, get your effing psycho ass in there. So he was like, all right, go ahead. I made you wait long enough.
So it was so watching funny. Watching the Blue Jays react to Scherzer doing the Scherzer thing where he yells was great, because
and this was better on the broadcast. I mean, also, I mean, I couldn't see it as much. Yeah, but
I don't know, man, like, not to get too sappy about it, but like, you know, when you see your grandparents do something you haven't seen them do in a while, right? Like that they used to do all the time.
Oh, but
you're like,
I mentioned
you like say to your friend, or like you say to your, you know, like my wife, yeah, like they used to do that, like that was their thing, like they loved that. And like the Blue Jays have been around Scherzer all year, right? But they haven't really gotten to see Scherzer cook like this because he hasn't been able to physically. He's, you know, really old. And so for them to get to see it, like there was a novelty to it for these guys. Whereas the Nats, by the end, if he did this, I'm sure like Howie Kendrick and Brian Dozier and Kurt Suzuki in the dugout are like, okay, Max, like, but like this,
we get
hit.
It, dude.
This was
we get
great.
It, dude. And I'm glad that's a good last point here. And then I guess we'll just look ahead to game five. But first postseason win for Scherzer since, do you know?
It would be with the Washington Nationals, because he did not win with the Rangers and he did not win with the Dodgers famously when he was there for 20 minutes. And he did not win with the Mets in the playoffs. I mean, I'll just say the 29th. I'll say the wild card game.
No, so he won game one of the World Series.
Impossible.
Yep. Game one of the World Series. So he obviously won plenty that month. He did start that wild card game, yes, but he was a no decision in that one. So yes, game one of the 2019 World Series was his last win. Wow. He started, I guess, 7 or 8 times since then. He did have an awesome start with the Dodgers, but they lost 1-0 against the Giants. So that was, it's been a while
that was
for him to win. I know
Webb
in the run. Yes. And the one, you know, the run with the Rangers, he started three games, but none of them were very good. You know, he goes three innings, three scoreless, I guess, in game three against the D-backs. And they won that game, but of course he doesn't get there. And by the way, that was what was so significant about that moment in the fifth, right? Is because if anyone, not that Scherzer cares about getting the win because he's just wants the team to win, of course, it's whatever. But also, if anyone is going to care about getting the win, it's him. Of course, that's fine. Whatever. If anyone's earned that, that's fine. So for him to get that was really cool. So yeah, I mean, that's all I had. I mean, again, like, we could focus in on how bad the Mariners have looked and all the problems with them recently. And I could do that very reasonably. But it's also would just kind of sound the same that we did about the Blue Jays. And then they showed up and looked awesome. So who knows where the series is going from here? All I know is that I'm going to Toronto on Saturday. So that's exciting, I guess. No, it is exciting. I am excited. What I'm not excited about is that I did not pack enough warm clothes. That is less excited for. So that's a bit of a whiff for me, but I am very excited.
No free ads.
I will say that.
No free ads. There's a Uniqlo right downtown if you need something cheap. I went and got a scarf. Before we get out of here, behind me, recording this podcast.
Yeah.
I know we have a third segment. I'm aware. behind me, I'm recording this from my sister's office. She is a space nerd at a university in New Jersey. There's a chalkboard here. In this chalkboard, I wrote in Woody Page style, Vlad the Impaler. We should probably talk about Vladimir Guerrero Jr., who hit another home run tonight. He is now 15 for 33 in the playoffs with five home runs, 11 RBI. And notably, do you know how many strikeouts he has?
I think like two.
One.
Who got him?
Schlittler. Schlittler got him.
Nice.
And all guess what? Guess what?
Yeah.
It was looking and it was a ball. So as far as I'm concerned, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. has ethically not striked out so far this year. This has been amazing. At every turn, Jordan, this postseason he's been there, dude. Like, even his outs have been hit really hard. Like, he's just smoking the crap out of the ball. And what I have enjoyed about this, and we'll talk about this a ton, is he's elevating himself, man. Like, he is going from one of the good second-tier players to one of the bad first-tier players. And when you have a player this talented who can – bad first-tier is a funny way to describe it. I understand. When you have a guy like this talented that can just lock in for 3 weeks and put a team on his back, it's amazing.
This is the thing. And this is why when we talked about his contract negotiations, we just talked about this last round too. It's like, great, he's a first baseman. He can only get five WAR. I don't care. If you have a hitter that is this good, and in October, the other team is like, what do we do? There is nothing that we can do. Because
the pitch he hit out
makes
tonight.
What makes him so special is that fun fact you just gave. Very few hitters combine contact and power the way that he can. And that is a short list. That's what makes him different. And it's just, and you know, he flies out in his last at bat. So his OPS this postseason did drop below 1500, but I wouldn't be shocked if he can get that, which again, it's unfortunate. It had really, really fallen since those first few games against the Yankees. But that's another thing. If we say big picture, like, it's different because Vlad's, 25, right? 26. But I also feel like I'm watching an all-time great. Same thing when I got to watch Soto do his thing in the postseason last year. You're watching someone that is in the middle of a career that we will be talking about and still get to watch for a long time. Of course, in this scenario, we're not talking about a cool home run in May. We're talking about the possibility that Vlad Jr. is going to lead his team to the World Series. And that is amazing. For so many reasons, for him, for what he's been through with the Blue Jays already, for what the ups and downs that he's experienced with that franchise, knowing that there's a decade plus still ahead of him, but you don't know when they're going to be back here two wins away from the World Series. And so that's why every swing from him is so important and so impressive. And yeah, I just feel fortunate to get to watch him. He is a true generational talent, and he has lived up to that hype.
Let's take a quick break. And when we get back, we will look ahead to Game 5, and I will ask you about Humpy. And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Jordan, did Humpy win? We talked quite a bit about Humpy, the Mariners' Salomon mascot, on our last episode. I went long on Humpy. Did a Humpy real, you know, I don't think salmon dive that deep, but I did in writing about them. Did Humpy win last night, tonight? What was the environment like?
Humpy did win. Humpy did get to a W-2 with a late push in game three. Okay. The timing there was tough because it was right after the Blue Jays scored 5 runs, which kind of sucked the air out of the building. And so, yeah, it seems like a bit of a split reception to the Humpy win. But I will say, tonight in game 4, Humpy did still receive by far the biggest cheer in the introductions, and then got destroyed. Humpy didn't even, was practically running the wrong way. I think Silver ended up winning. And so it felt like a bit of a correction there.
Well, here's my critique with this, okay? Either Humpy doesn't win, or he should have won by like 70 feet, you know, because it's kind of hard to see if Humpy won in the video. It's like neck and neck and, or, you know, fish and fish. It's Gill and Gill. And I don't need it to be Gill and Gill. I want this to be definitive. I'm happy that they course corrected. But this is the Humpy thing, right? When you have a character like Humpy, you really have one bullet. Here you get one Humpy bullet, and they spent the bullet at the right time, right?
Yeah,
that's okay.
Whatever happens, take away from the magic of that.
Yeah. No, it is, that moment is the most impact a mascot has ever had on a playoff game in the history of the sport. And so the idea that, like, why'd you let Humpy win again? Who cares? It's all house money for Humpy at this point, you know.
Yeah.
Now I think there should maybe be some more characters introduced. You know, we had the mayor of Seattle proclaiming October 16th, Humpy Day, which is just, I mean, what a city. I'm fascinated to see what Humpy does tomorrow. And if Humpy makes the trip to Toronto for game 6, which will be happening. So let's talk about tomorrow. We have, who's pitching
Humpy
tomorrow?
Humpy, find your passport, bro. Humpy's got to find his passport.
Humpy, get the vax. Humpy's got dual citizenship, dude.
Okay. Oh, yeah? He's close enough. He spent a lot of time in BC.
Humpy's Canadian.
Okay, game 5.
He's swimming up there.
Game 5. Bryce Miller, Kevin Gausman. Rematch of game 1. And it's very simple. Kevin Gausman was awesome until he hung a splitter. Bryce Miller was terrible for one pitch and then pretty good the rest of the way. But there was some loud outs. And with how the Blue Jays are swinging it right now, if Bryce Miller can pull this off again, wow. Like, wow, wow, wow. If he can give them even 5, 2 runs, 3, that would be amazing. However, the Mariners are going to have to wake up on offense here because they are struggling to score runs here at home, as they have in the past. And the Blue Jays are just up and down on fire with the bats. So even if Bryce Miller, you have to save the edges with Toronto. I think you have to. Not that that has really meant anything in this series. So who cares what anything looks like on paper at this point. And I will say, back to the original question you asked earlier, which is like, is this series close? Now we're going to find out, because now it's 2-2. Now it's a best of 3. And the Mariners, you know, the Blue Jays have now, I guess, taken home field advantage back. But what does home field advantage mean? Apparently nothing.
Nothing.
Teams are,
it's a curse.
0-4 so far in this year. So I don't know how to analyze either of these teams at this point. I think while each team has taken turns looking really bad and really good, it makes me feel that, like, I do feel like I'm watching the two best teams in the American League. Like, I feel like these teams do belong the players, there are still moments even in the bad times where it's like, yeah, that, wow, they got some good players. But we haven't seen an actual fair fight in an individual game. And I hope we do at some point. And I don't really know when that's going to happen, where it's going to look like. But like I said, I'll be going to Toronto on Saturday and we'll see where it goes from here.
It's so interesting, too, the way that you and I split the series, where I left Toronto after game two and I was like, the Mariners are the greatest team I've ever seen. And then, like, you hop on the series of game three and you're like, this team stinks. Like, the Blue Jays are the greatest team I've ever seen.
Dude, like, you might be only the problem because I've only seen the Mariners look like garbage this year. I watched them get smoked in Williamsport. I watched them come to Cleveland. And I guess the game they blew in Cleveland, I left before they blew it. But, yeah, I don't know. It's been tough. But hey, now here we are. This series is going to get the attention now because the Dodgers might wrap things up tomorrow with Ohtani against Tom Brady's dad. So we'll see. We'll see how this goes.
Now, the one thing about the game tomorrow that is very Tom Brady's dad is whether Brian Wu makes an appearance. Brian Wu, who was not on the roster for the last series, all-star pitcher, probably the best starter that the Mariners had all season, is on the roster for the ALCS, and he has not thrown a pitch. Jordan, what is your understanding, having been around? Are we going to see Wu tomorrow? Is he a factor, or is he just on the roster to, like, kick it and just instill fear?
I'm sure they would love for Brian Wu to pitch. It sounds like as the series has gone on that they are now more considering him in sort of a leverage relief role that has not appeared in these two games here in Seattle. And so he went out to the bullpen in game three. Obviously it didn't matter because they got blown out. I really felt like we were heading towards it in this game if it had stayed close. And I think he would have, especially for how quick we got the Castillo leash and how many outs they needed to get. If they were able to keep it close, I think we would have seen him. Now, I don't know. I guess he could be an option again tomorrow after Bryce Miller, if he's, especially with how some of these leverage relievers have not looked awesome. We haven't seen Munoz here, but we've seen Brash have some struggles. Spire continues to struggle. Bizzardo, I love him, but he served one up tonight. So, I don't know, man. It is really weird. It is because I guess he could start game six, but does that make sense? Because by then you're just going to have Gilbert. Like, I don't know. It is a very, very weird X factor for him to be on the roster here, not be built up to make a start, but still clearly someone they want to use in the right spot. So I'm wondering also, I think we all are, and I'm not really sure what to say where that's going.
Do the Mariners win tomorrow?
Sure.
Does Humpy win tomorrow?
No way. No chance. I think
more likely that would Humpy be wins tomorrow or the Mariners win the series.
Mariners win the series. Feel good about that. Yeah. Feel good about that.
Okay.
But we'll see. We'll see.
Hey, pop quiz, by the way. Do you know, I was at Rogers Center and you'll have this experience too. The Jays mascot is far and away the least memorable mascot in baseball. Do you know the Jays mascot's name?
No.
Like, do you know what it looks like?
No. No, I don't. I don't. Yeah, I know what it looks like.
It's a blue bird.
Sure, I name everyone's. Yeah. No. Sorry. I'll have to apologize. Hopefully the mascot doesn't listen to the pod.
Ace the bird. No cultural cachet.
Yo, Trey Savage game six, by the way.
Yeah, pretty great.
I know we got to get past game five, but that's going to be... Because think about that.
That's
the Savage is either going to be send us to the World Series or save the season. No pressure.
Game sixes?
All right, Jake.
Better than game sevens.
Do we have anything else that we need to talk about? It is very much later where you are, but I still got to finish writing some words. So any last quick things before we say goodbye?
Yeah, we don't need to do a whole dealio here, but Yankees had an end-of-season press conference. Surgeries for the following human beings. Anthony Volpe repairing the torn labrum in his shoulder. He will be out probably through opening day. He cannot dive on it for 6 months and cannot hit for four. Seems important. friend of the show, Carlos Rodon, getting an arthroscopic procedure to remove loose bodies from his left elbow and shave down a bone spur. That's a mouthful. He also won't be ready for opening day. Gerrit Cole, also not ready for opening day, but he should be ready a little bit after that. Good news, though. Aaron Judge, he will not need surgery on his elbow, which means that we can continue asking him about it all of next season when he starts the year 0-6. I'm sure we'll be like, Judge, Mr. Aaron, is the elbow bothering you? And then he'll say, I'm just trying to do what's best for my team. And then he'll hit 3 home runs the next day. The other notable press conference postmortem we had was the Phillies, where Dave Dombrowski, did you see this? Dave Dombrowski, the president of baseball operations for the Phillies, just like negged Bryce Harper. Like, this was fascinating. You saw this, right?
I did. This was strange. This was a little strange. I don't really have the bandwidth to like fully process this, but this was interesting.
Yeah, I can do it. It's 1:55 a.m. Eastern, but I'm built different. Dombrowski was asked whether he thought Harper could still be an elite player. And he said, quote, of course, he's still a quality player. He's still an all-star caliber player. Didn't have an elite season like he had in the past. And I guess we only find out if he becomes elite or if he continues to be good. Can Bryce rise to the next level again? I don't really know that answer. Wow. There's two ways to view this. You can view it as there are only two ways to view it. Reckless or genius. It is either hating on your best player with no real reason behind it, or it is saying, Mr. Bryce Harper, you are the face of this franchise. I need you locked in for 162. I can't have you going through these 3-week stretches where you don't look like you care. You are the guy. It's in you. Give me some more. And I think that's what this is. Personally, I think Dave Dombrowski is too smart to just be like, go out there and be like, Bryce Harper, yeah, he's a bum. No, I think Dombrowski is trying to light a little bit of a fire under him. I saw someone tweet that this is like a classic Phil Jackson move. You know, it's got a little J.K. Simmons and whiplash to it. Sometimes you got to give a little tough love. We're not used to seeing tough love because there's so much, you know, what's the opposite of that? Soft love and babying, where it's like, this guy's great. We love this guy. You know, every time Aaron Boone is like, Anthony Volpe is going to be a superstar. And we all have to be like, yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, it's funny you mentioned Volpe, because I was really going to bring it up more in the context of players that have been established and have been superstars for a long time. And I think about someone like Scherzer and the way that John Schneider would talk about him, where it's like, well, he's Max Scherzer. He's going to be awesome. But like every time we go out there, he would get crushed, but they don't care. He'd say like, who cares? Like, it's Max Scherzer. He's awesome. Or Verlander, right? Like these guys where it's like, clearly they're past their prime and it doesn't matter because they've earned where their managers are just like, well, no, it doesn't matter. He's a Hall of Famer. So he's going to be a Hall of Famer. And it's like, okay, but he's clearly not that anymore. And in those cases, it's more extreme. Sometimes they end up being right and you get a performance like we had from Max tonight. But that's why this tact is so interesting and purposeful, seemingly, as opposed to just like a careless comment. Yeah.
Well, the better comparison is actually how Boone treated LeMahieu at the end, where it was just like,
sure,
DJ, he's still a great hitter. He's still someone who can help. And then like 2 days later, they got rid of him. That's a much better example. Whereas like, you know, they're lighting real fire here. The last little nugget from this is Matt Gelb of The Athletic, who I would consider a friend, certainly. I know he's listening, so I'll say it with a question mark. Matt wrote that Nick Castellanos is not expected to be back next year, that the Phillies are expected to trade or release the veteran outfielder, club sources have said. Dombrowski's reluctance to say anything about Castellanos on Thursday affirmed that stance. When asked about Castellanos, Dombrowski said he could not comment on, quote, specific players that are on our roster under contract, then spent the next 34 minutes doing just that. That's awesome. Hey, can you talk about Nick Castellanos? I'm not allowed. Can you talk about Bryce Harper? He stinks. That's enough for us today. Thank you to Andrew Hartz for staying up late and producing the same thing with Ingrid Rosas. Thank you to you, Jordan, for carving out the space in T-Mobile Park to record with me. Thank you to my sister, Abby, for lending her office here in the astrophysics building at Princeton University in the basement. maybe the weirdest place I have recorded a pod, and I cannot wait to go to sleep. We will talk to all of you next week. Goodbye.